Welcome back to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. This week, we bring you another episode of the Delaware Humanities podcast, A More Just Delaware. The podcast examines pivotal moments in legislation related to hate, prejudice, and the fight for equal rights in the first state. In this fourth episode, we focus on marriage equality legislation passed and signed in Delaware in 2013. Among those instrumental in passing this law was former State Senator Karen Peterson, who, with her spouse Vicky Bandy, were the first to convert a civil union to a marriage when the law went into effect on July 1, 2013. Peterson joins us on this episode to discuss the legislation, the work to pass it, and its impact. Getting to 2013's marriage equality law, I often see it as a process, and I'm curious if you feel the same way, because I feel like it really started maybe back in 2009 or even a little bit before that as the state worked to add sexual orientation to its anti-discrimination law. Do you agree that that was kind of the starting point, and how important was that to get that done to set up the ability to move forward?
Yeah, you're right. It started long before 2013. And it started thanks to Bill Oberle. Bill Oberle is the one who, session after session after session, kept introducing bills to protect sexual orientation under Delaware law, in particular with employment laws. You know, we already had a law protecting people based on race, color, sex, religion, and so forth. But sexual orientation was never on that list. And so Bill Oberle would get the bill passed in the House routinely. It would come to the Senate, where it would die in the pro tem's desk drawer, known as the desk drawer veto. And that bill died year after year. And then Bill retired. And lo and behold, the bill got reintroduced, and it finally made it over to the Senate. And when it got to the Senate again, it was put in the drawer of the president pro tem, who announced at the time that the bill would pass over his dead body. And interestingly enough, that's exactly how the bill got passed, the day after he died. It was scheduled to be on the agenda the day he died, but in deference to him, we waited until the next day and finally got it passed. And so once that got passed, then other bills started coming in, removing sexual orientation including sexual orientation protections in various laws. I still never thought that in my lifetime we would see civil unions get passed. But along came Equality Delaware, the group founded by Lisa Goodman and Mark Papura. And they started working the halls at Legge Hall with this bill that would allow for civil unions. And so eventually it got onto the agenda, and lo and behold, it got passed, which was a real surprise.
I don't want to stop you there just to ask you a little bit about that debate over civil unions in 2011. Can you take us back to that a little bit? Because at the time, that was pretty significant, because Delaware, at the time the law was passed, was only the eighth state to legalize same-sex civil unions. So after all those years of trying to get an anti-discrimination law passed, Delaware is actually moving more toward the forefront of the issue. Tell us a little bit about how that debate went down and how that bill got moved.
Yeah, well, it was the usual arguments that we heard every time the word sexual orientation came up in any bill. We can't do this because it will allow creepy men into women's bathrooms and they're going to molest your daughters. Now, to me, it made a huge difference in my life because I have a same-sex partner, obviously, and she would be able to be on my health insurance. We would be able to, you know, file state taxes as a couple and get all the benefits that came with being a legitimate couple in the eyes of the law. And so it was an uphill battle. But I got to tell you, Lisa and Mark did an incredible job walking the halls, getting co-sponsors on the bill, propping up people as they got all this hate mail from these groups, especially some downstate groups. That just said, you know, this was going to destroy humanity as we knew it. And they just plowed through. And I was not a co-sponsor on that particular bill because I was afraid of becoming a lightning rod on it. So I didn't put my name on it. Obviously, I voted for it I don't think I even spoke on the floor about the bill, but got it passed on the first try, which was pretty amazing. And then to have that followed almost immediately by the marriage equality bill. I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime.
I was going to say, well, two things. One, I remember some of the argument during the civil unions debate being, oh, this is just the first step to marriage equality. And a lot of people said, no, it's not. We're civil unions. And yet, as you mentioned, it came very quickly. And so it sounds like you were surprised to see that it turned around so quickly. Do you have any thoughts on why did the atmosphere just change that much that it was possible so quickly after civil unions to go and get this marriage equality bill done?
Well, I think one of the things that happened is that leadership in both chambers changed so that we didn't, especially in the Senate. I mean, the Senate is where these bills typically got blocked under Senator Adams. But of course, Senator Adams passed away. And then Tony DeLuca, who was a supporter, not a big supporter, but a supporter, he didn't block the bills. So I think, you know, Equality Delaware was on a roll. And they just kept rolling once the civil unions bill got passed. And I mean, it just plowed right on through, you know, following the civil unions bill. And they were right. They had the impetus. They might as well keep on going. And they did.
As you look at the kind of debate, first with civil unions and then moving to marriage equality, there were people who were on the fence. These bills were by no means slam dunks. There had to be those kind of pivot votes that were going to make a difference. Your recollection, were the personal appeals to those swing votes more influential, or were the kind of civil rights arguments, the things that you talked about earlier about like you having the healthcare rights and the tax rights, you know, to be a couple, were they more persuasive, or did you need kind of a combination of both?
I think it was a combination of both. I mean, I know of you know, at least one legislator in the House who has a gay son, but he had never said that out loud. But that certainly weighed on him. And I think his support brought some other people on board. You know, like if he can support it, I can support it too. But I also thought the civil rights piece of it. But again, it was mostly along party lines that it passed, as mm-hmm. I recall, because we still had those groups from downstate who were upset with civil unions and went ballistic over marriage equality. And they just, you know, thought the sky was falling. And, you know, if we had a hurricane, it was because Delaware passed this bill. So we were up against a lot of that. In fact, when the marriage equality bill came to the House, I was a sponsor by then. So I was a co-sponsor on it. And I hadn't decided whether or not to say anything during the debate. And I had written something. But I wasn't sure I wanted to, you know, become a lightning rod for the bill. And so it wasn't until a priest from the Diocese of Wilmington got up and spoke that I thought, I'm going to speak. I've got to do this. And what I said was, I found it so interesting that the bishop, and I'm Catholic, so I'm not, you know, dissing another religion. The bishop, I said, I think it's interesting that he sent a person to rail against marriage equality, rail against people loving each other, but didn't send anybody down 3 weeks earlier on my death penalty repeal bill. So it was, you know, they didn't think it was worthwhile to come down and say, don't kill people, but they sent somebody down to say, don't love people, don't love each other. And I just thought that was so interesting. And that's when I decided to come out publicly on the floor of the Senate. And I was criticized by some people for doing that. At that point, I didn't care. You know, and I talked about, you know, my partner and I had been together for 24 years at that point. And I likened it to the case of Loving versus Virginia, the Supreme Court ruling in that case. Where people couldn't marry each other because the Bible said that the races weren't supposed to mix. You know, people from different continents weren't supposed to. And I said, this is the same thing. This is exactly the same thing. You know, and I said, if my happiness somehow diminishes or demeans your marriage, then you need to work on your marriage, you know, because I have the same right to happiness as you do. It was funny because that quote was taken by a guy in California. He made T-shirts out of it. he sent me one of them. He emailed me and said, can I use that? Because apparently people all over the country were tuned in to that debate that day. I had no idea so many people were listening. But, you know, but it still fell pretty much along party lines in the Senate when it passed. But then, of course, the governor was waiting out in the hallway to sign it. I never saw a bill signed so fast. He wanted to do it while everybody was still there. You know, the place was packed. And he went up on the steps between the first and second floor and had a bill signing right there and then. And then Equality Delaware asked if Vicki and I would be willing to be the first to be married under the marriage equality bill. Of course, went into effect on July 1st.
Yes.
And I said, well, wait a minute. We're going to be in session all night on June 30th. And you want me to get married at 8 o'clock in the morning? Are you serious? but we did it. I think I rolled in around 5 o'clock in the morning and showered and dressed and went off to the city county building to get married. And that was a wonderful experience.
I was going to say, how important, you mentioned the fact, I guess, you know, nowadays they're trying to keep the General Assembly from working so late into the night, but back then right. It was almost a guarantee you would. But how meaningful was both that moment on the floor where you made your statement, one that was clearly, very powerful in that discussion, and then to follow it up a few months later with being the first couple to convert that civil union to a marriage. You know, for you personally, because a lot of times we talk about these things like writ large and the policy and what they mean, you know, for the country and for the state, and we don't talk about the personal piece of it. And I'm curious, you know, for you, you know, how much of a personal impact did those two events within months of each other have for you?
Well, you know, it was surreal. There I was, 63 years old at the time. I had accepted in my life that I would never be getting married because it wasn't allowed. And here I was at 63 getting married. And so that was pretty amazing to me. But the thing that I think amazed me even more than that was when we got to the city county building, we were going to be married by Kenny Bolden. Mm-hmm. And Judge Barbara Kroll, who is a friend of ours, she had done our civil union. So we asked her to be part of the marriage, too. And we got there and we went right from the garage down right on upstairs. So we didn't see anything going on outside. We didn't know that the Westboro Baptist Church had showed up with their hateful signs. And so right after we got married, and of course, the press was all there because we were the first in Delaware. And we answered their questions. So we went downstairs and walked outside. And here they had closed the whole street down between the state building and the city county building because so many supporters had showed up. And there were hundreds of supporters in the street. And in the background was Westboro Baptist Church. You know, but it was amazing to walk out and to feel so accepted. By so many people who got up early and drove downtown and found a parking place just to come out and congratulate us on our wedding. So, and then later that evening, we had a dinner to celebrate. And I remember the state police said they would keep an eye on the venue because of the Westboro Baptist Church. They didn't want them showing up. So it was just an amazing day. It was just incredible to us. And then, of course, right before we got married on July 1st, the Supreme Court ruling had come down. And I got an email from somebody who said, here's your wedding gift. Now you're recognized under both state law and federal law. And that meant a whole lot. I mean, there were hundreds of benefits for married people under federal law that we never had any access to, you know, beginning with taxes,
right.
for example. And so it was a wonderful time. I think it's a wonderful time in Delaware's history. And it was a wonderful time for me and Vicki personally and for our family.
And it wasn't long after all that in 2015 that then the U.S. Supreme Court made marriage equality the law of the land. Do you feel that the discussions and debates in states like Delaware helped accelerate the process of reaching that moment that it truly became the law of the land?
Yeah, I think all of it helped. I mean, it was just a time in our history, I mean, nationally, that all of a sudden people started saying, look, this isn't right. This isn't fair, that people will be not denied benefits and such. Yeah, I think it all just kind of surfaced at one time in the country, because then after us, state after state after state followed. And it was something that 10 years earlier, you know, we never would have imagined any of that happening. And then all of a sudden it started to happen. And I like to think little old Delaware was a part of that.
I guess, you know, what do you see maybe as the legacy of marriage equality passing in Delaware and ultimately becoming the law of the land nationally? And I guess beyond just the law itself, you've talked a lot about the organizing behind making it happen. What do you feel the legacy of all that is in the state of Delaware to having both that law in place, but also the work and the way it brought people together?
Yeah, I think it just makes the point that it can be done. The most amazing things can be done if you have the right people working the bill and you garner public support, which in that case, they had done some polling that showed most Delawareans supported civil unions and marriage equality. So you're able to show that to legislators. But I think at this point, you know, we've been able to enjoy all those benefits all these years, but now we're in a position of maybe having to fight the battle again with the U.S. Supreme Court making such a hard right turn that they want to, as Justice Thomas said, they want to reconsider some of the decisions that they made. And of course, if they reconsider same-sex marriage, they need to reconsider the whole interracial marriage thing, which I don't imagine Justice Thomas would want to do. But so we have to be vigilant. It was not one and done.
Right.
Not in Delaware and certainly not at a federal level. I'm not sure they can unmarry us, but I'm sure some of those Supreme Court justices would if they could. So we just have to stay vigilant on this and a whole host of other issues.
Clearly, after Roe v. Wade, that's a legitimate concern. But do you feel that the landscape has changed? And let's even speak specifically about Delaware. There's significantly more LGBTQ plus representation in the General Assembly now. We have a candidate for Congress in Sarah McBride who is transgender. Do you feel that's also part of the legacy of marriage equality, that it did open the door politically for LGBTQ representation that may be pivotal in maintaining these rights long term?
I think so, although there aren't nearly enough LGBTQ people in legislative bodies to protect it alone. They're going to have to, you know, rely on friends to help them do that. It certainly wouldn't affect the Supreme Court. They don't care. You know, every legislature could be all LGBTQ and they wouldn't have any problems with, you know, with reversing that. But I think it has made a difference. You know, when I was elected, I was first elected in 1980 as county council president, and you wouldn't dare try to run as an out gay person. You would just be done, you know, before you even got started. And even when I was elected to the Senate in 2002, it was the same thing. You know, people knew I was gay. People in my district knew I was gay, but it wasn't something that I had ever said publicly. But now people can say it publicly and not get, you know, run out of town. And so I think it little by little, it's making a difference. And of course, there's huge support for it. But as I said, that doesn't seem to affect the Supreme Court, or they would not have made that decision in the Roe v. Wade case. So we just have to kind of survive this Supreme Court and hope we keep everything intact. And that, you know, all we could do is hope and work for that.
And obviously there are other issues that also continue to need attention. Probably the one that's most obvious is transgender rights. That's a fight that's happening across the country. It's happening here in Delaware as well. Do you feel like lessons learned from marriage equality can be translated to that debate and that discussion and getting those protections added as well?
Well, you know, Tom, we did pass those protections in Delaware in 2007. we passed the transgender, we call it the bathroom bill, because mm-hmm. that's how the right talks about it. Everything's about bathrooms to those people. And we did get that passed. And so when that all came up again under civil unions and marriage equality, you know, we said, wait a minute, we already dealt with that. We're done with that. We already said where people go to the bathroom, you know, but it didn't stop. The transgender bill was, that was really some of the most hateful testimony. That was even worse than marriage equality. It was worse than civil unions. And people just, you don't know where they get their thoughts from. I can't say facts because they're not facts, but all these things they come up with about how horrible. And they, you know, it's always back to the creepy old men and the women's in the ladies' bathrooms. And they seem to really obsess about that. But we got it done, and it wasn't, it was ugly. And I remember at one point, Sarah McBride's mother and father were testifying on the floor of the Senate, and she was sitting over along the side by herself. And these people were just being hateful. And I got up and I walked over and I sat down with her because I thought somebody should sit with her while these people were being such asses. And so, in fact, she mentioned that incident in her book, you know, that she was alone in this fight. You know, she and her parents, they were the ones who were leading the fight. And they were also the ones taking the arrows in it. But I'll tell you, you just shake your head to think, how can people be so hateful mm-hmm. and just stupid?
And we unfortunately still see that in terms of, we see it now in the issue of participation in sports or other issues within schools and things like that. And I guess that's what I was referring to in terms of Delaware, that those things may yet be litigated again in the General Assembly.
Yeah, they could be. You know, Delaware's General Assembly, I think, has changed. It's even changed a lot since I retired 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I go down there for different things right now, like, you know, we're still fighting for our health insurance right. and things like that. And I see how polarized the Delaware legislature is becoming. And it wasn't like that. I have to say that it just wasn't like that before, but it is now. So you have this group, if one says, we're against this, then they're all against it. You know, no rationale, no reason, it's just our position. And of course, the Republican Party has gone so far to the right. And sometimes the Delaware General Assembly does some of that too, which never happened in the past, at least not all the years I was there.
We've talked a lot about the good and the bad in this podcast about marriage equality and these rights for LGBTQ plus the community. Do you at this juncture feel more or less hopeful than you did back when you were in the trenches of that battle?
I feel less hopeful. And I'm kind of shifting into fight mode, you know, because it looks like we're going to have to go back out and fight the battle all over again, unless some really good things happen in the November election. You know, we could codify all these things, mm-hmm. You know, and put an end to this nonsense. But until that happens, you're going to get legislatures getting all these, you know, goofy bills going in about where you can go to the bathroom and you know, who you can love and all these other things. I think we're just going to keep seeing that. And that seems to be getting worse because these people have been empowered by our former president to be rude and obnoxious and hateful. And I've seen that just grow and grow in the past, you know, 8 years. And I'm afraid that's going to continue until somebody just puts their foot down and say, and we get control of Congress to get these laws codified, whether it's Roe, whether it's same-sex marriage, whatever. It just all needs to be in the law so we don't have these people nipping at our heels in all 50 states all the time.
You've been listening to the Delaware Humanities Podcast, A More Just Delaware, with former State Senator Karen Peterson, discussing marriage equality legislation in Delaware. The full podcast is available at DelawarePublic.org and DEHumanities.org. The podcast is brought to you by Delaware Humanities, a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Delaware Humanities is a recipient of United We Stand, connecting through culture funding from the National Endowment for the Humanities to support A More Just Delaware and related programming. And that's a wrap on this edition of The Green. The stories, interviews, and podcasts you've heard are online right now at DelawarePublic.org. Just head to The Green's page on our website. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter there by clicking Newsletters at the top of the page. And remember, The Green is also available via podcast at our website, as well as Apple Podcasts and the NPR and Delaware Public Media apps. We'd also like to hear from you. Give us your feedback and story ideas on our Facebook page or by emailing us at thegreen@delawarepublic.org. Thanks to all those who helped make this week's show possible, contributor John Hurdle, Delaware Humanities' Rachel Sheffield, and our senior producer, Kyle McKinnon. For all of them and the rest of the staff here at Delaware Public Media, I'm Tom Bernstein. Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you again next week on The Green, where Delawareans get tuned into a first state of mind.